Hi, I'm Deborah Holtship, the editor of Michigan Today, and welcome to the latest edition of Listen in Michigan, where my guest is Ralph Williams, Arthur F. Thurnau Professor Emeritus of English, Language, and Literature. Ralph Williams is a name known to countless University of Michigan alumni dating back to 1970, when he earned his PhD here and began his U of M career as a professor. This is his fifth decade teaching courses in medieval and Renaissance literature, Shakespeare, and biblical studies, among many other things. And ask anyone who's taken one of his courses, and you'll soon discover Williams is more than a scholar. He is a passionate teacher, deeply committed to the one-to-one human connection. In 2009, he was honored by U of M students with the first ever Golden Apple Lifetime Achievement Award, which was supposed to mark his quote-unquote retirement. Just 2 years later, Ralph Williams was back in the classroom, entertaining and educating students with his distinctive teaching style. As the academic year comes to a close next month, he took time out of his classes because I thought it would be fun for his former students, and even those who never even took one of his classes, to hear Williams' voice again as he ponders some of life's big questions. We start with an especially timely topic in light of the current political climate in this country. Williams, a Canadian by birth, has a unique take on what he describes as the paradox at the core of the American project. Here's Ralph.
I came to think of America as a project, something paradoxical, something which was not replicated elsewhere in the world, really, in the same way. A place where people were invited to come, people of all languages, all races, all religions, with their social customs, and allowed to be themselves, and yet, what seems paradoxical, to form out of those who came here one society, while still allowing them to be who they are. And what I came to understand, at least what I thought then and still think, is that you can't resolve a paradox like that, but you can live it better or worse. You really can. If you try to solve the paradox, generally what happens is that either the society disintegrates into its constituent parts, or you try to go the other direction and have a single society made up of people whom you try to make uniform. But you can't do that, because to do that you have to destroy people's memories, and their memories are their identities. But you can try to live it better or worse. You really can, and experience the richness while still trying to maintain something of the singleness of the project for us all. It's an ongoing project, and for me, the American University, public university particularly, as an institution set up by the society, in my best understanding, to bring to it those of the peoples who have significant stake in this society, all of them, and set them in conversation with one another about the shape of their future cohesion as a society. What memories do you bring to it? What memories do you bring? What ideas? What issues? What economic, social issues? What issues in constituting what it is to be a fully independent, mature human? Right? What insight does your group have? And instead of insisting that everybody be one according to someone's model, you ask them to contribute what comes from their background to an understanding of what we as a group can be in future, how we might cohere as a society. Because if we don't have representatives of all of the parts of our society, then those who are excluded won't be dedicated to it, won't be loyal to it. They don't have a stake in it. And if we don't attend to them, we lose the richness of their past, which is not the unique strength, but particularly the strength of this country, and particularly the strength of the ways in which we try to learn here. We talk a great deal about diversity now, and we covet and we need it. It is essential to the American project and the project of a public university. But it's not enough to have diverse populations here. This is the time in their lives, and this the place where they come to sort out personal identity, to conceive it, to enact it, and social identity. And that takes conversation. It's a sacred space. It's a clearing, to use Toni Morrison's term, where we come and for a while we're more, perhaps, than at any other time of our lives, asked to listen, to speak, to imagine. And for that, there needs to be a space of freedom where one can think and speak, if not with total impunity, because there is hate language, and that stops the process of communication. But with maximum openness to hearing and to responding to the thoughts, the contributions, the emotions of others. In a certain way, what needs to go on here, and should go on here, is the way in which we can be in what I call the full human presence of one another.
Before we get too carried away in these deep and profound topics, I wanted to include one funny anecdote about the way Williams learned to read as a boy.
I'm the youngest of five. So when I was 3, 4 years old, my brothers would be sitting in armchairs reading. I would toddle on up, and I'd stand in front of them, and they'd point out to me the letters. So I learned to read upside down. And to this day, I can read just about as quickly upside down as I can right side, because that's the way I learned.
One of the great pleasures in talking to someone like Ralph Williams is that you can kind of ponder the nature of love and happiness and the meaning of life. Listen to this.
Happiness is not a state into which you fall. It's a choice of the will, and it's always against odds. I'm not Pollyanna, and I am in anguish and moral anger at the pains and injustices of the world. I've studied and studied and studied, but the grand answers out there are frequently not available, and so you need to make a choice, right? And I don't know, frankly, whether as a race we're going to make it, whether as a society we're going to make it. I don't know, finally, whether love is at the basis of the universe, what Dante speaks of as the love which moves the sun and other stars, right? But one makes a commitment, finally, if one chooses that that's the way it should be and tries to work that out, right? And that's an arduous thing.
Anyone who knows Ralph Williams will tell you it doesn't take long in a conversation for Shakespeare to arise. Here's Ralph discussing the nature of harmony, disharmony, and what it means to be human.
I was thinking this morning of a passage from Merchant of Venice. It's one in which Lorenzo is speaking to Jessica. And it's night and it's still and there's music. And he says to her, "Sit, Jessica, and then look how the heavens are thick inlaid with patterns of bright gold. There's not the smallest orb that thou beholds, that in his motion like an angel sings, still choiring to the young-eyed cherubim. Such harmony is in immortal souls. But well, this muddy vesture of decay doth grossly close it in. We cannot hear it. The belief was then that the orbs circled, and like one of those singing tops we had as a child, they made a sound, and the sound was harmony. But then the point which he puts in the mouth of Lorenzo is, such harmony is in us. But the pitch isn't one we can hear. All right? And the struggle to achieve a harmony, personally or in a society, is to me an engrossing object of attention. And it's why I am where I am in the arts, because it's there where, in a way, not exclusive to the arts, but particular to them, certainly, someone will try to put into words, into motion, as in a dance, into the visual arts. They'll struggle to inscribe somehow the world with the harmony which is in their souls, sometimes tempered, sometimes distempered, all human. And to watch the way in which humans try to work out the good in themselves and then work out the good in the society around them. This to me is the joy of life and why I'm here and why I continue teaching. And it's in full view of the fact that the grand answers might not be available to me, might not be available to us, but we have a project going. And the project is one toward a harmony which holds dissonance together and difference together in one society. And the University of Michigan is a place where you can work on this and work it out.
Since Ralph Williams is an acclaimed biblical scholar, it made sense that we should spend a little time talking about such light fare as God, morals, and the Bible.
The Bible, it's really a library in itself. And if one reads it intently, it is at least arguable that what one finds oneself, first of all, confronted with, and then, if one chooses to engage with it, immersed in, is a centuries and now millennia-long debate on how, if one chooses, one lives with that God and one lives with other people. And you hear the voices of the ancestors of that tradition, if one chooses to engage with it, in sometimes very heated debate with one another about how we constitute the groups in which we suppose we live. Who's in? Who's out? Is the God good? Does the God do good only? Or does the God sometimes do bad stuff? Well, how do you live in the face of that? How do you act toward others? Well, who are the others? How do you constitute them? Why do you constitute them that way? How might you live better with the other? How might you make them part of us? How might we make us fully sympathetic with them and willing to be with them? To enter that textual system is precisely to be ethically, morally engaged. In questions which are sometimes presented in the form of questions, but then in narratives, which involve at times enormous pain, little human vignettes of Peter having promised he'd never deny Jesus, and then finds himself under pressure and swearing, I don't know him, right? And then going out and weeping bitterly. If anyone who reads that hasn't been in the situation where one time when friends were being maligned, ill-spoken of, in a group where that friend wasn't there and didn't speak up because you didn't want to disturb the group, you know that sick feeling. And you want to go out and weep bitterly, and you sit and think about what loyalty is, right? And loyalty against social prejudice. So there's all of that and more.
Quite often at the beginning of class, Williams greets his students with the Shakespearean phrase, "The wind is very much up." So I asked him about that, where it comes from, and what it means to him.
The wind is very much up. It has a reminiscence. It's from Shakespeare in its own way. It's a reference to the end of the tempest. And after all of the agony involved in that play, there is at the end of the play the general shape of a reconciliation, and life will go on. And so it's that sort of wind which I hope to provide for my students in their education. It's always a possibility that the winds of life will turn into a tempest. But winds can also be that which helps to bear one along in the voyage of life and in the voyage of an education. And it's, all right, let's live in these winds now, but the winds are up and they're well-intended winds. And from you, and they'll catch you from afar and take you where we need to go, I think, if you'll engage with that. And so, I'll deliver all, says Prospero, and promise you calm seas, auspicious gales, and sail so expeditious that shall catch your royal fleet afar. My Ariel, the spirit of the air, Chick, that is thy charge. Then to the elements be free, and fare you well. And so both parts of that, the promising of the attempt to give auspicious gales, but it's one which I hope will carry them along to freedom in what is the setting free. I have students who will be in my presence possibly for as long as 4 years. And the goal of that is to set them free then, to realize their own humanity in what I hope will be an increasingly free society. I wish desperately, I'm 74, I'll be 75 in May. I wish desperately that my hope to leave to the next generation a society and a world in better shape than it was during the Second World War when I was born. And I wish desperately that I will be leaving it in better shape than it is now. Freedom, their freedom, the freedom of the generations I've taught, with whom I've learned, their freedom will be the freedom to challenge the distortions and evil in the world around them, and to create that wider freedom, which I think is the nature of the American project and the project of this university. And I hope that in that they fare well.
Well, that seems like the perfect place to end. Thanks so much for listening. If you've got your own stories to share about Ralph, please do so in the comments section at the bottom of the page. Hope to have you back next month. And as always, go blue.